before we get going too far here, do you mind closing your email browser there? I'm sure you're gonna get a lot of emails, and we hear the
oh, you're hearing the ding
every time it pops in. Yeah,
I thought it was closed. That may be one of my phones. I got
how many phones?
Yeah,
do you
I figured,
have there?
Seven phones.
Seven phones.
You have seven phones.
Seven phones.
Explain that.
Dang. Well, let me close all my stuff here. Just to make sure, because so like anything else, right? If somebody called you from a, you know, foreign number as a gringo American, would you answer it? No, you would say, foreign number. I don't want to get scammed or hustled. So without doing any hard math, other than Hurricane Ian, we haven't had to do any operations inside of America. Therefore, all my stuff is foreign. And it makes it just a little bit easier to contact people if you have a local number.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
All right, Wheeler, speaking of phones,
yeah.
I noticed something just before this podcast.
What'd you notice?
Our text chains are no longer green bubbles with you.
They are not.
Did you upgrade to an iPhone? Did you graduate?
Yeah, you know what's funny is that you just now noticed that. I did that probably last September, October, and we've texted many times between now and then.
I don't know why I didn't notice. You're like one of the last friends I have that still had the Android.
Yeah. Which,
you know, don't start texting or you know, tweeting me about, you know, Android's better than the iPhone.
No,
whatever. Okay,
it's fine. And I know I totally get it from both sides now because I've tried both of these. And I will say that I desperately miss the text at any time feature from the Android, though. You could schedule a text. That was the most valuable thing about Android. So every time I texted you, if it was before, like, let's say 9:30 in the morning, that was always a text that I had scheduled the night before at like midnight or 2 in the morning. And I would schedule it to come to you at like 9:17 a.m. So it looks like
some
I'm
random
totally,
time, yeah.
Of course I'm awake and working and up and around every time I was in bed.
Apple needs to adopt that because, you know, you could text your boss like at 6:30. Hey, I've been meaning to ask about this project. Is it still on track? Something like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
I hope they're listening.
That's good.
I hope we got your attention up top here because the guy that we have here on the podcast today, he's not kidding when he says he's got seven phones, got, you know, things dinging and binging and going off. This man, you know, Jason, there are some people that you meet in life and you think, this person was born to do this. This person is made
right.
for what he is doing. And thank goodness, because, you know, there's a lot of people who can say that they are alive today probably because of his actions.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, this is an episode that you can listen to this weekend instead of going to see a movie. This guy has stories, and it's fascinating to listen to him. So many things that I didn't know about tradecraft and things like that. And if you're ever going to have a beer with us, this is the podcast to run to the fridge or wherever you are, grab one, and pop the top on it and listen to this dude because he has quite a few stories. And these are harrowing stories,
yeah.
life-saving stories for Texans and for Americans that he has plucked out of, you know, remote regions of the world that are hostile environments.
Yeah, this is not for the faint at heart. In some cases, you know, it's a little bit graphic even, but this is the
yeah.
reality of what he sees out in the world and what he's dealing with. I think you were about to ask me what I'm drinking.
Yeah, you want to get to the podcast, man. What are you drinking?
I do.
Today? Because
this
is a good one.
I'm having this, it's Texas made. I'm not sure exactly where. Oh, Mission, Texas. Fubar, only because, you know, it's got the camouflage on it. This guy served, you know, a couple of decades in the military, the one we're talking to today. And also, you know, Fubar. I mean, he goes into a lot of situations where, you know, we'll say it is fouled up beyond all recognition. And he is the only one. He and his group are the only ones going in when everybody else is running out.
Very, very appropriate brew there, my friend. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
It's odd
man.
For me, isn't it?
That is a good one. I should have thought more about my selection today. But before I get to my selection, you know, something else that always strikes me, people use another military acronym, yeah. SNAFU.
SNAFU, uh-huh.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the time in professional situations.
I have used that in many cases, like on the air. I'm not kidding you.
You know what it means, though, right?
I do now. But yeah, it didn't always.
You've never used FUBAR on the air.
No, I have not. Thank goodness. Yeah. Except just now. Yeah.
This is the first, huh?
What are you having? Are you having a SNAFU beer? Is that why you got into this?
No, not at all. But the FUBAR threw me off there. I'm having a Spindle Tap.
Oh, nice.
Proper Pilsner. This is from Houston, mm-hmm. The Spindle Tap Brewery in Houston. I love Pilsners, and I've never had this one for some reason. I don't know, but this is one I picked up at HEB when I was driving through Austin the other day.
It's a very cool name, by the way.
Yeah, indeed.
So as you take a swig of that, let's introduce this guest and not keep you waiting on this man. So here's the thing. We keep seeing these headlines here and there about people being rescued from the other side of the world, from Afghanistan, from Ukraine. And these are not official rescues. These are not like government rescues. These are rescues being done by people who are working outside of government lines in the most dangerous parts of the world. And here lately, we have seen several headlines about Texans. These are Texans who are being rescued and brought back here to Texas. And these people didn't have a chance. And over again, the name that you trace this back to as to who did this is a place called Project Dynamo. This is a group that formed up after the U.S. pulled out of Afghanistan back in August of 2021. They sort of, came together as this ad hoc group, and, well, things sort of coalesced, and they, started making this a real operation. And boy, they've gotten this thing going over the past several years, and they've probably never been busier than they are now. And we've got the co-founder on the line with us. His name is Brian Stern, and this man is a character, folks. And again, as Jason was saying, this is like stuff out of a movie. There will probably be a movie made about this guy someday and his group, because just wait till you hear about some of the things that they've been able to do, and it's just extraordinary.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics.
And before we get going, I know you served in with the Army and the Navy. What should we call you? What rank should we call you? What do you suggest, man?
I'm a civilian. Brian works.
Oh, that's easy. We like easy around here.
I've been called a lot of names. I got some Cunhas also.
So Project Dynamo, I was reading a lot about it here, and one of the things that really stuck out to me, we'll get into all the missions and things like that, because I'm curious about it, but one of the things that stuck out, it says that Project Dynamo operates in the gray space where the U.S. government does not. Tell our listeners what the gray space is. Tell me what it is.
So it's exactly that. It's we came up with it because we needed to come up with a fun way to describe it. It was entirely too long to explain where we work and how we do it. And the best way to think about it is wherever the US government is ineffective or isn't present, right? For whatever reason, either like in Afghanistan because they left, or during Hurricane Ian, we were first in the water. We actually beat the US Coast Guard. We were there for about a week. Once federal resources came in, then we took off. Where I don't have the budget, the executive branch of government. So, or in places like Ukraine, where they're never gonna do rescue operations. They're just not. No SEAL team is ever gonna jump the border into Mariupol to pull an American out. I know that because we've done hundreds of those and they've never been there. And then in places like Russia even, right? We did an operation in Russia the Thanksgiving week, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, where there is a US embassy. We're not at war with Russia, not really. But the diplomatic relations are so poor that the government, for no fault of their own, just the way the circumstances are ineffective. And we did an operation there too and rescued two babies actually from Texas, oddly enough. So Thanksgiving, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So it's wherever the government can't function or isn't functioning or isn't present, that's the gray space where it's not quite there, but not quite not either. It's not like we can't send a SEAL team into Ukraine. We just choose not to, for whatever the political and diplomatic reasons are. But bottom line is we don't do that, right? Afghanistan is the same way. We just did an operation for 7 green card holders that also from Texas, incidentally, that were in Jalalabad for the last 18 months trying to get out and couldn't. Hmm. There is no U.S. embassy in Kabul. It doesn't exist. It's not there anymore. So how do you, if you're an American, if you're a green card holder, how do you go from hiding in Jalalabad to Texas? How do you do that safely and not get your head chopped off by the Taliban? How do you do that? Well, you can burn dynamo.
But before we get going too far here, do you mind closing your email browser there? I'm sure you're gonna get a lot of emails, and we hear
you're hearing the ding
every time it pops in. Yeah,
I thought it was closed. That may be one of my phones. I got
how many phones?
Yeah,
do you
I figured,
have
there? Dude,
seven phones.
Seven phones.
You have seven phones.
Seven phones.
Explain that.
Dang. Well, let me close all my stuff here. Just to make sure, because anything else open? No, I think that's everything. Like anything else, right? If somebody called you from a, you know, foreign number as a gringo American, would you answer it? No, you would say, foreign number. I don't want to get scammed or hustled. So without doing any hard math, other than Hurricane Ian, we haven't had to do any operations inside of America. Hmm. Therefore, all my stuff is foreign, and it makes it just a little bit easier to contact people if you have a local number, right? That's one part of it. The other part of it is we have very sensitive intelligence sources that are all over the world that help us do our business, that help us conduct operations. And we have a very robust communication security program to manage all that for their safety and for our safety. Mm.
To date, how many people would you say you all have been able to get just out of Afghanistan, without even considering the other countries that you've talked about, just out of Afghanistan?
Afghanistan, we're over 3,000.
Jeez.
We're over 6,000 total with everything, with everyone. About 400, almost 450 operations. Hmm.
And this latest one that we contacted you about, you just referenced a moment ago. It was a woman and her 5 children, lawful permanent residents here. You brought them out of Afghanistan, brought them back to Texas. That happened this month. And I thought it was interesting. I saw a piece about this, and you explained that every rescue operation is different. And you said this one had yet another unique challenge. It required safe houses, vehicles, airplanes, medical personnel, and extensive operational testing and planning to successfully mitigate dozens of Taliban-controlled checkpoints along the route. This sounds incredible, and this is just one rescue that we're talking about.
Correct.
The work that must go into this, how long for 6 people, for 7 people that you're trying to get out, let's say, how long are you planning this?
It depends. It really depends. This one was a couple of weeks in the making. This one was a little bit challenging. There were two groups. One was a single male. And then we had a second group, which was a woman with 5 children. So six packs and a single. So that equals to 7. Mm-hmm. The single guy wasn't so bad, but unbeknownst to him, he actually played a very critical role in the operation unwittingly. In Afghanistan, if you're a single female, that's a problem. That's a real problem. That from a good, bad matrix perspective, that's pegged in the bad section. And she has 3 daughters and 2 sons. The 3 daughters are all of marriage age. So that compounds that problem a little bit more. So the single male, unbeknownst to him, he was actually the brother of her, but don't tell him or don't tell her that. Mm. They don't know that part. Mm, so the Russians call me Volshabnik, which means the magician or the wizard. And that's very much, it's so appropriate. It's such an appropriate nickname. They say it with anger. I wear it as like a badge of courage or a badge of honor almost. I love it. And that's very much at the core of Dynamo. I can't get into a gunfight in downtown Kabul. I won't survive. There's significantly more of them and there's no help coming for me. So if I brought 50 guys armed to the teeth with machine guns and hand grenades, and at some point we're going to run out of ammo, and the reality is I'm not going to walk to Iran. This is not going to work. So or to Pakistan or to any of the other closed borders. So we are very tradecraft heavy, meaning we're more Donnie Brasco and less Lone Survivor, if that makes sense, right?
That's great.
So, you know, when I'm on the street working the Ukrainian Russia issue, I'm in head to toe Adidas and Fila with a man purse and full on Euro trash. And
you're speaking Wheeler's language. You're speaking Jason's language here. He wears the same thing.
Yeah, we can hang out,
so it's fine.
Skinny jeans, yes. And I got tree trunks for legs, you know? So, but that's it. That's it. It's supposed to look like nothing. And what usually happens is with these operations, we publicize only about 10% of what we do. For a lot of reasons. But whenever we do these things, the other side is at least frequently mystified. You know, how did this gringo come in and do, we did an operation, the Russia operation that we did. We made it was my third time in the Moscow Times. And it's super cool. Vladimir Putin knows my name, which I just think is awesome, and not necessarily in a good way. You know, and I can imagine Vladimir Putin, you know, having his morning cup of coffee, you know, like this, my ego talking, right? My ego. There's Vladimir Putin and, you know, his girlfriend's upstairs and his wife is at the table, you know, and he's going through his morning paper and he's having a cup of coffee and he's like, not again. Damn you, Dynamo, you know. You know, you pescals, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. What did you do to get the nickname from the Russians, the magician? Was that the rescuing the scientist from Mariupol?
No, that was one. The real one that got me the name was the Eddie Alexandrov or Kirilo Alexandrov operation, the kid that I broke out of jail on Victory Day. Mm. And he's from Michigan. And he's the first American victim of war crimes with a pulse, still alive, since World War II. He was tortured and mock executions, and his wife was tortured and brutalized, as you would imagine, all those terrible things. And it was a pretty horrific case. He had 11 charges of espionage levied against him by the Russian FSB, which is like our FBI.
Sure.
It was the magic trick of magic tricks, frankly.
He was jailed in Russia, though, right?
He was in Russian-occupied Ukraine, about 200 miles on the wrong side of the border, which may as well be Russia. Right. The Russians walk around shopping. It's from their perspective, it's Russia.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Russian passports and Russian license plates and Russian SIM cards and Russian law and Russian currency, Russian rubles,
yeah,
all that stuff. So for all intents and purposes, you know, the Ukrainians are trying to get that territory back. But at the time, he was, depending, the border moved a little bit. So give or take, depending on the day, about 200 miles the wrong side of the border. Mm-hmm. And I broke him out of jail on Victory Day as Vladimir Putin went to the microphone, is how I did it. And the Russians didn't know, which is like, so like, imagine, right? You guys are in Texas. You guys are in Dallas or Houston, or where are you?
Yeah, Dallas.
Dallas, okay. So imagine if the special agent in charge of the Dallas field office for the FBI had a Russian spy in custody, and it was July 4th weekend, right? And the fireworks ended, and he went to go visit his prisoner and bring him food, and he wasn't there. What would happen to that FBI agent?
Yeah, he'd be gone. Is that what happened here? Siberia?
He'd have a lot to answer for. He'd have a lot to answer for.
So Brian, how did you get him out then?
Magic. He went through 50. He was the most famous American in the region. And he's covered in tattoos. So it's not like he blends in well.
Right.
Terrible. And Russian occupied Ukraine, the Russian part of the Russian propaganda machine says that if you have tattoos, you're a Nazi, which is really funny because pretty much every Russian army guy I've ever met has tattoos. But
wow.
don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, you know.
Right.
So anyway, he gets rolled first week of April, and he gets rolled first week of April, and I was negotiating through some middlemen to get him released, which is always the best way. Whenever you do hostage rescue stuff, it's always best. Doesn't matter if it's a barricaded subject from a law enforcement perspective or a hostage overseas, it is always better to negotiate somebody out. It's safer, it's better, it's cleaner. Not always easier per se, but definitely absolutely the first choice, right? You never want to send a SWAT team in. You want a hostage negotiator to talk the bad guy out.
Right.
Always. Yeah. So
can you tell us a little bit, because I've looked at your website and I see on there that you've got, I guess, you know, places where people can request help. How do you know about most of these people? Because, you know, you're talking about thousands of people that you've been able to get out. How do you even know of them and where they are and how to get to them?
So it depends on the cases. We have different kind of flavors. We have a program called Apollo, which are like humanitarian convoys. There's a buses and cars and minivans that I can weasel into bad places and weasel them out because based on our knowledge and intelligence. We have a program called Atlas, which is for deaf people and blind people, which sounds like how hard could it be? But I'll tell you what a difficult thing, because Ukrainian sign language is fundamentally different than American sign language. And
wow,
there's a stigma associated with this stuff in Eastern Europe. So, you know, if you're deaf, you can't hear the air raid sirens, so they're tremendously vulnerable, and they get all these different things. So we have another program called Gemini, which is our surrogate baby program. Those are American babies that are born to Ukrainian mothers, if that makes sense. So it's an American embryo and genetically an American, but for whatever reason, they can't have children. The Ukrainian woman is like the baby oven, right? We've done 70 of those operations. What does that mean? We've rescued 70 American babies under the age of a month old from the war zone.
Wow.
70.
And this is not just you, Brian. You have a team of other veterans who served in the U.S. military who are also working with you, right, in Project Dynamo?
Yep. We have a small team of volunteers, and not all of us are military. And it's one of the great things about Dynamo is I have volunteers that work for me that are MAGA hat wearing, you know, Trump tattoo having folk. And then I have other people that work for me that, no kidding, have Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders bumper stickers on their cars as we speak right now. It's what I love about Dynamo as the founder. What I really love is that this is nothing to do about political crap or any of that stuff. This is purely about taking care of Americans. Nobody cares. It's just like when you call 911. Your house is on fire and you call 911. They don't say, "Did you pay your taxes this year?"
Right.
No. Are you? You know. Well, how did you vote for the recent town mayor or whatever it is? Right. Nobody asks. They go, "What's your address? We're on our way. We're going to come and get you." And that's kind of how I approach it.
Well, so speaking of that, Jason just asked you about your website, and on your website, projectdynamo.org, at the top right, there's a request form to be evacuated from Ukraine and a request form to be evacuated from Afghanistan. Now, we're all kids of the Cold War here, and, how do you trust those things that come in? I mean, I'd be afraid to fall into a trap, man.
Yep, and it happens. They've sent hitmen to kill me. They've tried to bait me into different scenarios, for lack of better terms, go different places and do different things. We're really careful, and we always try and stay two or three or four moves ahead. And like I said, it's Donnie Brasco. So, you know, we lie, cheat, and steal for the good guys. We don't break any laws, but we are highly manipulative. We telegraph our moves over here and make noise over here to do something over here. We do a lot of stuff with routes and tradecraft and rally points and all kinds of stuff. So we is it possible? Yeah, I mean, they dropped artillery on me literally meters away from my vehicle in April, trying to rescue a paratrooper from North Carolina. So, I mean, it is very dangerous. It's very dangerous. I went nose to nose with a hitman. These idiots thought that I was walking into their ambush. Well, joke's on them. They walked into my ambush. But But I was arm's length away from a guy that was sent there to murder me.
So
I can see the veins in his eyes.
So you've got a lot of enemies out there. I want to ask you, because you said that, you know, you're going in and essentially getting people that the U.S. government is not going to go get in these places. Has the U.S. government ever, you know, given you a heads up and said, hey, if things go really wrong for you in these places, by the way, we're not coming to get you either?
Oh, yeah. They say that all the time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I echo when the State Department will get on TV and when they do press conferences about Ukraine, they'll say, we advise all Americans to not go to Ukraine. State Department and us have a very complicated relationship, as you would imagine. Mm-hmm. And of all the things that state has said, good, bad, or otherwise, that data point of don't go to Ukraine if you're an American, I echo. It is a incredibly volatile place. Things go from okay to pretty terrible in the blink of an eye. Lots of people, I mean, people forget that, you know, Ukrainians have lost, that they admit to 130,000 people. Yeah. Imagine if 130,000 Americans got killed tomorrow or in the last year over something. We'd be going nuts, right? We lost just under 3,000 on the morning of 9/11, and we went to war for 20 years, right?
Yeah.
Right?
And Jason, same question there. Has the U.S. government or state or anybody else said, hey, Brian, while you're over there, see what you can find out on the back channels about so-and-so or this person?
No, I mean, we don't have – our relationship with the government is I communicate up. They don't communicate down. So when we're – especially on an American case, I don't want to get in the way of anything. So if state or the intel community or DOD is working on a case that I'm working on, you know – as a guy who spent most of his career in the intelligence community and special operations community, I don't want to be in the way of my friends. If my friends and my colleagues are coming to your door, they're coming there for the guy that they're looking for. Everyone else is going to have a very bad day, right? I don't want to be around when that happens, right? So we telegraph up, we let them know what's going on. We engage with them and their family and by with them through the families and all kinds of stuff. And they don't help us. They don't help us, but I like to think that it's kind of our obligation and our duty to keep the government informed about what we're doing, especially about our people. And very often we get referred cases by accident from them. The John Spohr case, the nuclear scientist case, was just like that. He was trapped in Mariupol. He's a nuclear scientist with a head full of secrets. Crazy story, and he's famous. So
and he's from Texas, isn't he?
He's from Texas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his LinkedIn page was like a shrine to military technology. He had this big monster house. He was like the Mick Jagger of Mariupol, right? Everyone knew John the American. I mean, it was operationally, it was a nightmare.
Including the Russians knew him very well. Yeah.
He was the number one priority intelligence target for the Russians. Number one strategic target in the region by the Russians. So,
but you got to him first, though. You got to him first, and your team extracted him, right?
Well, he's sitting in Texas right now, so I guess it all worked out.
the magician.
Not a scratch.
The magician strikes again, right? Yeah.
I mean, that's it, right? You can imagine, like, the head of the FSB who just got slapped around over the Carrillo case, got broke him out of jail, and like weeks later. We do John Spohr, and it's like, wait a minute. Carrillo was a nobody, but we had him in custody, and this guy got him out of the can. That sucks, but actually no loss. This guy we've been looking for, can't find him, and now I'm looking at him laying in JFK. Good damn you, Dynamo! You know, I love him. I'm happy.
Brian, you know what's interesting to me is that, you know, human ingenuity and desperation being what it is, some of these people might have eventually found a way out of some of these circumstances if they hadn't had you and your organization. But, you know, by and large, a lot of these people may have perished if it hadn't been for you all. That's got to be pretty heady stuff for you. I mean, is that an accurate statement to say that a lot of these people don't survive if it's not for this grassroots effort that sprang to life after the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan in 2021?
If you're every one of our people would tell you that. They would all say, you know, that they would be dead or could be dead or probably dead, some variation of that. but for a Dynamo, for sure. I mean, John Spohr will tell you, I mean, he had 200 Russian intelligence officers or so. We don't actually know the number, but, you know, lots and lots of them looking under every rock looking for him. And, you know, they probably wouldn't have killed him, but they would have tortured him pretty well and raped him pretty good. And it would have been an unbelievably terrible experience for him because he has a head full of secrets. He worked on small things like the B-2 stealth bomber and the F-35. I mean, they really wanted him. Terry Gately, a Christian missionary that we broke out of jail, also arrested. You know, these guys are arrested or on the run because they're Americans. That's their crime. Mm-hmm. That's all that they did. That's all they ever did wrong, was that they were Americans. Carrillo in Detroit, he was a farmer. He married a young Ukrainian woman. Her father died. She's an only child. Her mother didn't want to be alone. He moved to Ukraine with her, had like a Ukrainian green card, lived in nowhere Ukraine, on the river, living the good life. Young kid, he's 26 years old. And they were firing bullets past his ears every day for 37 days. They broke his back, tortured him, all kinds of terrible things. So what's his crime? What did he do wrong? His passport says "We the People" on it. That's what your passport says. Well, in my career, that is a deal breaking, you know, SEAL team activation level problem, right? If you're, you know, we used to say, well, the best way to meet a SEAL is to hijack a boat, right? You'll meet a whole bunch of them. You'll meet a whole bunch of them, right? Or get, you know, take an American hostage. See what happens. Ask Jessica Buchanan. Her rescue, the anniversary of her rescue was just this week, two days ago, and out of Somalia. You know, you could ask the people that took her, you know, what happened, but they're all dead. That's what happens. Now, for some reason, we don't do that, and that is why Dynamo exists. That is why. If an American is in trouble, the government should come, and if they're not going to come, okay, I'll take care of it.
Every case is different, you were saying, and I can imagine that between Ukraine and the hurricane, Afghanistan, etc. But give us an idea, like how you get these people out. I mean, are they in disguise? Are they hidden in places?
All kinds of stuff. We would be here for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. John Spohr, I converted. You ever see Argo the movie?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the John Spohr case. I took when we made first contact with John Spohr, he was wearing Prada shoes and Armani underwear. Okay. True story. If you're listening, John, sorry, bro. He's awesome. He's a good friend of ours. Good friend of mine. We had to convert John from a wealthy, affluent, you know, upper middle class or upper class American scientist, 80-pound head genius with dozens of patents, and he specializes in light, whatever. I mean, I'm a C+ student in physics. Like, you know, this isn't my area. We had to convert him from that, right? And everyone knows him, to a homeless, refugee, handicapped, deaf, mute, non-walking Ukrainian refugee from the epidermis out. So as an example, when we get John into one of our safe houses in the area, and one of the first things I did was I broke the plumbing in my safe house, right? And I put him on a salami and cheese and Fanta orange soda diet, right? Right? And he couldn't brush his teeth, right?
I follow you.
Stinks.
Yeah.
Stinks. So if you're Corporal, you know, Vladimir, I hate America, Russian border guard guy, and you stick your snout into our vehicle, you see this guy who hasn't showered. He stinks like salami and cheese. If you ask him a question, he's going to make noise. We made him like handicapped, kind of, right? And I got documents and all kinds of things to corroborate everything that are all legitimate. I can't use fake documents. I got to use real documents. The Russians are not the Taliban. They have databases and all kinds of stuff. So everything's got to be very smart and very deep and well thought through. But the reality is, if you stick your nose in the thing, you know what you're not going to do? You talk to any police officer, the worst thing they ever have to do is arrest a homeless guy. The worst thing. The last thing you want to do is arrest someone who's hasn't showered. He stinks. He's dirty. You don't want to touch him and put him in your car and get all nasty. Well, that was one of about 200 different things that we did.
Wow.
Jeez.
Wow.
I want to ask you this. I was reading a little piece on the from the Modern War Institute at West Point. I don't know if you've seen this, but you were talking about how, you know, the government doesn't necessarily embrace you guys and say, hey, you know, let's work with you and let's have you do this and we'll do this part. But this is a pretty credible place, the Modern War Institute at West Point. And they sort of raised the idea that this is something that could have legs. This is something that perhaps the Department of Defense should consider as like an auxiliary force, as something that could be done in the future where, you know, the military, you know, can't necessarily go, or the state cannot necessarily go. Maybe we should embrace this sort of helper force out there of very motivated civilians, you know, who are crowdsourcing to get things done that the U.S. government can't get done. And that maybe this would be even a very good way to help retiring service members to transition out of the military and still be useful and use those skills. What do you think of that idea?
I think it's a double-edged sword. So, prima facie, I think it's a great idea. The tactics that I employ at Dynamo, I didn't invent. I'm trained, you know, our taxes dump millions of dollars into little old me, you know? So from a return on investment perspective, it kind of, why wouldn't you, right? It's why wouldn't you? I mean, I'm kind of old and gray a little bit, and you know, the military is a young man's game. You join at 18, you retire at 38. If you're 40, you're like a senior citizen, right? You know, especially if you're still on the street, you know? If you're a general, okay, but I'm a street guy like that, you know. A friend of mine named Billy Waugh, who's one of the most famous agency officers that ever lived, he deployed to Afghanistan on his 71st birthday in 2001. Those wow. guys are the sacred cows and the national treasure that we have. Billy Waugh is part of the "don't mess with me" crowd. He's an old man, and I tell you what, I wouldn't want to fight him today. I mean, he's got to be 80, almost 90. He's got to be 90 something. He was 71 in 2001, so yeah, he's 90 something years old. And today, I would bring a gun to that knife fight. I would. So there's a real, you know, there's definitely something there. The problem is, and this is where I flip it. Today, if you took every special operations guy that we had, every Navy SEAL and every Green Beret and every Delta guy and every Army Ranger and everything, and you asked them, when was the last time you had to deal with cruise missiles? We don't have it. An American service member has not had to defend themselves from enemy aircraft. We haven't had a casualty from enemy air in 65 years. It's a long time, really long time. Right, so we have a generation of soldier that's used to fighting with fobs and against an enemy that wears flip flops. That's sophisticated and smart. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it is what it is. But the reality is, the Taliban don't have close air support and they don't have a navy. They just don't.
Yeah,
I deal with those issues every day. The Russian Navy and Russian electronic warfare capability is a real problem. I'm not worried about sniper rifles and IEDs like we did in Afghanistan. I'm worried about real big boy hypersonic missiles that can geolocate to a cell phone. So in our arsenal of human capital, we are at a little bit of a deficit, because we're really good at this. And just like pre-9/11, we take it for granted. You know, 22 years ago, we had people who knew nothing about terrorism. Today, everyone's got 15 deployments. You know, when I was in infantry school as a private in the Army, it was a huge deal if your drill sergeant had a combat patch. It was your platoon felt cool because your instructor had a day of combat. It was a huge deal. And that day of combat was either Desert Storm or Bosnia. Not exactly... You know, right? We take it for granted that, you know, I got friends of mine, they've killed 5,000 bad guys. I mean, I have friends that have killed more people than cancer. So, you know, after 20 years of war, we kind of forget that. But there was a time where we didn't know anything about terrorism, where the Department of Homeland Security didn't exist, you know, and all these things. Well, we have to kind of get back the old way a little bit. We're really good at hunting terrorists, but actually defending against cruise missiles, we're selling tanks. We just gave tanks yesterday, got approved. We're giving tanks to the Ukrainians, right?
Yeah.
Good thing. Show me an American tanker currently on active duty who has been in tank-to-tank warfare.
Yeah.
We don't have it. We don't have it.
It's been 80 years, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have it, right? Yeah. A couple of dudes that were in Desert Storm, maybe, and like that's about it, right?
I have two last questions for you. The first is, how do you survive financially? I know Project Dynamo is a nonprofit, but these are expensive propositions to go places, to research, to pay 7 cell phone bills. I mean, come on, Brian.
Yep. So we are entirely donor funded, and at least so far, we're all volunteers, including me. I live off my disability check is what I live off of. And most of my staff, we've refinanced our homes, and we've sold jewelry, and sold a couple of guns and all kinds of stuff to stay afloat personally. But we're, I live on, you know, most of us are disabled vets, so we live off that. We're trying to figure out a way to sustain. We're not there yet, but I'm really hopeful. But you know, we're looking, you know, we started in Afghanistan and then we expanded into Ukraine. Somewhere in there, we did Russia too. And somewhere in there, we did the hurricane also, right? And now we're looking at things like Taiwan and the China problem. And 7th Fleet is not gonna come. They won't be able to do it. And probably a lot of Americans will get out, but 100%, this is now a pattern. Americans are gonna get stuck. Who's gonna help them? The Chinese Communist Party? Probably not.
Well, what's your disability, Brian?
My rating? I'm at 80% right now. I should go to 100%, but I'm at 80 right now.
I'm sorry, for what?
All kinds of stuff. I've broken 27 bones in the service of our nation.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Don't go out of airplanes. Listen to me.
Yeah. Well, my last question is, and I'm sure Jason Wheeler has a whole list that he still wants to ask, but my last question is, it looks like you're coming to us from, you know, having this conversation from your home, maybe in the States. Yep. Are you concerned for your own safety when you go to the grocery store, when you go fill up with gas?
Not really. I mean, I guess I'm paranoid enough when I'm overseas. I'm not important enough to the bad guys. You know, I embarrass them.
You've been mentioned in the Moscow Times 3 times. What are you talking about, man?
But like, they have much bigger fish to fry. They have a war to lose. You know, the Russians have a war to lose. I've gotten death threats though. I get hate mail all the time. We get all kinds of stuff, but honestly, I don't know. I mean, I'll put it this way. Lots of people have tried to kill me and I'm still here. I'll say that. So, I feel supremely confident that I'll be okay. And if God forbid something happens, it's just part of it. You know, you can't, part of winning this war, which we consider ourselves engaged in, is the information piece of it. It's good to embarrass the Russians a little bit. I don't want to piss them off per se and make them angry, but right up to that threshold where they're irritated, that's a big part of what gets these things going. Mm-hmm. That really, you know, we talk about this all the time. What does victory in Ukraine look like? Big political discussion that a lot of politicos on both sides are kind of arguing about. You know, what does that look like? Well, what that looks like is a humiliating defeat with the Russians driving east with white flags over their tanks saying, "We screwed up, but please be nice to me," you know? And just like what we saw when they fled from Afghanistan during the Cold War in 1979. So, you know, you want to see that imagery of the Russians going over Friendship Bridge saying, "Yeah, these guys on horses kick, beat the crap out of us." And that's what you see in Ukraine. You see Ukrainian grandmas. I was a 18-year-old kid in the infantry, is how I started my career before I went into all kinds of crazy stuff. I can empathize with the 18-year-old privates and corporals in the Russian army who are getting their asses handed to them by Ukrainian grandmas. How demoralizing is it that, you know, babushkas who are, you know, 70, 80 years old are just cleaning your clock? It's got to be my morale would be in the toilet. I would feel terrible.
Yeah, I don't think they knew what they were getting into with that one. The Ukrainians have proven that they, they have some crazy fortitude. It is amazing what they've been able to do. I want to ask you this because, you know, you noticed that Whiteley's last two questions, by the way, turned into five. But I've just got a couple more for you, legitimately a couple more. I'm curious how often you think about the people you're trying to get to or you know you still haven't gotten to. Maybe people who worked closely with the U.S. in Afghanistan or even for that matter in Ukraine, people who have really helped us out, who are really in danger. You've had so many success stories, but how much do those people who are still stuck weigh on your mind?
Every moment of every day. That's what fuels me. I don't care about our successes. I mean, I think they're fun stories and they're cool stories. And, you know, like, Tom Cruise will play Carrillo in a movie one day or something, right? But what wakes me up and fuels me is all the work that still has to happen. We have thousands of requests. You guys asked me to turn my thing off. That ping noise is our database. That's what that is people saying, this is where I am, please help me. This is who I am, please help me. My dog, my cat, my sister, my uncle, my brother, my cousin, they're getting bombed, they're being murdered. You know, I have a team of volunteer case managers who are, most of Dynamo is actually not military. We have housewives. We have got a teacher. I got a nurse. The case managers are the ones that interact with the people. We do the operate. My team and I do the operations, but the back end of that is the case managers. And you want to hear horrible stories? They've literally been on the phone with people talking, trying to find out where they are and how can we get to them or whatever. And you could hear the gunfire and the bombing in the background. The line goes dead.
Wow. Do you need people? What if somebody's listening to this and they go, I want to help with that sort of thing. Do you need people?
Number one thing I need is financial help. These things we're cheap by comparison. We're on a shoestring budget, but gas costs money, travel costs money, sources cost money. Russians don't commit high treason because I'm a nice guy. They do it for benefit to them. Cars cost money, cell phones cost money, all these things cost money. You know, food. There's parts of Ukraine you can't find a roll of toilet paper for under $50. Mm. So, like, you know, the money and the story is dried up in the media. So the number one way anyone who's listening can help me, projectdynamo.org, push the donate button. I take it all. We take checks. We got a guy now who takes a stock for us and converts it for us. I didn't even know that was a thing. All kinds of stuff. But we need financial help. And then we need financial help badly. And when you say things like Taiwan, which I think is a foregone conclusion, it's just a matter of when, you're talking boats and helicopters and airplanes, and it'll be a very, very, very expensive evacuation operation. And I think it's coming, and I think it's coming a lot sooner than people realize.
My legitimate last question for you is this. We talked earlier about your staff and how you've got, you know, from MAGA Republicans all the way down to people who still have the Hillary sticker on their bumper, and they all get along, they all get together, and they make this mission happen that otherwise wouldn't, okay? So you are seeing in that the best of America, okay? Mm-hmm. You're seeing people of all stripes coming together, getting the job done, and taking care and getting Americans out of really harmful situations. You also are going to these countries around the world that essentially are failed. They're failed countries in some cases, and where the worst of things are happening. And I'm curious what perspective that gives you and what you would say to your fellow Americans who are listening to this, because here we are, you know, we're pretty blessed being in this country with all that it is, and yet we're at each other's throats on a day-to-day basis. You've seen the best of America, you've seen the worst of the rest of the world. What would you say to people here? Because, you know, none of this is guaranteed.
I'd say a few things. One, we have to get better. We do. You know, we're the United States of America. It that means something. There's a reason why people are running to come here and people aren't, you know, flooding to go to Botswana, you know, as immigrants, right? There's a reason why, because we're the best country in the world and we lose sight of that. You know, the monster huge problems that we have in this country are kind of jovial in most other countries.
Yeah, eggs are expensive.
Right? Yeah, you know, I mean, oh my God, right? I'm talking right before I came on with you, I'm talking with a guy who's literally living in his basement. He can't leave. He's an American who's stuck in a particular place. And he has not eaten in 7 days. Hmm. You know, what he wouldn't do for an expensive egg right now. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So what I'd say to people who are listening of all shapes and sizes and all colors and creeds and all that stuff is we're an amazing country. And sometimes the best way to really appreciate it is to leave it a little bit, but you know, we are amazing. We are, and everybody wants to be an American. Nobody wakes up. No, nobody from Wisconsin says, you know what? I really want to be Lithuanian today. Hmm. Nobody says that. No one says that, right? No one wakes up and says, you know, I've always wanted to be from Sierra Leone. No one says that, right? People in Sierra Leone would and they have given their organs for a visa to come to America, right? So we need to remember that. And yeah, we have problems and yeah, I'm not minimizing or maximizing any of that stuff. It is what it is. And part of being an American, you know, it's in our nature to fight. People forget that we're founded on rebellion and it's in our, you know, we have a gun culture because we like to shoot everything. It's a very American, you know, there's no such thing as a cowboy from Sierra Leone, right? I mean, we don't have that, right? You know, they don't have that. So, you know, we need to appreciate who we are and what we are, but never lose sight that we are the greatest country in the world. Everyone wants to come here, and that our problems, while important, might not be the earth-shattering things that are going on. And we just need to remember that a little bit and appreciate each other. Some of my best friends, I happen to be a Republican. Some of my best friends are deep, deep blue. You don't get any bluer. I have transgender friends, all kinds of stuff. Part of being an American is that we're allowed to have the conversation. In other countries, if you're the wrong thing, whatever wrong means by whoever's saying it's wrong, it's off with your head. If you're literate in Afghanistan and you're a woman, it's like high treason. You can that's cut your head off, go get married off to the Taliban and go get raped by 25 people type stuff. It's an amazing thing to be in a place where we can say, not only am I a woman, I choose to be literate, but not only that, I choose to be illiterate if I want to. We have the choice. That is what makes America special. And I think everyone kind of forgets that it's, you know, we talk about protesting and all the election stuff and everything. I've been to countries where if you show up to protest anything, they hose you down with machine gun fire. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You can show up to protest anything. And if the government says no, they kill you and they take your children away and they rape you, men and women, both. I met a lunatic Bharati guy who, Bharati's a type of, it's a ethnicity in Russia from the mountains. They look like Eskimos. They look like a Native American, right? And what this guy would do is he would rape the pets of people in interrogation. What planet am I on? Are you right? And I'll tell you, if you rape my dog, you'll be begging for mercy because I'm going to go to work on you with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch. Like, leave my puppy alone, right? There's crazy things out there. Nowhere in America would anyone say, no law enforcement agency in America would say, well, what are we going to do to get to the bottom of this case? We're going to rape your dog. That's another planet for us. And we need to remember that these crazy things happen every single day. And we're blessed to not, with all the problems that we have, we don't have a lot of the problems other people have. We have power, we have electricity, we have toilet paper, we have, even when we didn't have toilet paper, we still had toilet paper. You know what I mean?
Yes, some people were just hoarding way too much of it.
You know, like, we still had it. You just couldn't find it anywhere. But people, your neighbor had toilet paper. So like, there weren't hordes of Americans going to the bathroom in the street. We figured it out.
Some great perspective being thrown down by Brian Stern today.
I feel like that. You know, I have a different lens. I see the world through a different lens than most people, I think.
I imagine.
Brian, email me one of your cell phone numbers, one of those seven. I might need you to extract me from this podcast sometimes if Wheeler's questions go any longer. Man, hey, we appreciate the insight. Be safe out there and keep up the good work with what you're doing.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, big salute to what you all do.
Please donate. Facebook, Instagram, we got all that stuff. Please like us. We put a lot of fun stuff up there and embarrass the bad guys. But by all means, please donate. We need your help really badly. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, y'all. The conversation doesn't stop here. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Yolitics.
You know what cracks me up working with you, Wheeler, is that you will always throw some random, you know, acknowledgement in there from something you read.
What was the random?
So you were like, I was reading the Modern War Institute from West Point. Come on, dude. Come on.
It was all research.
Who the hell?
It was research.
Who the hell reads the Modern War Institute from West Point?
Guys who do podcasts.
You're perusing it. Yeah.
It's guys who do podcasts when they have to, you know, do a little bit of research. My camera just fell off there. I was doing a little bit of research. I don't typically read the Modern War Institute from West Point, but, I was getting ready.
Dude, I mean, I'm on Yahoo, and you're at the Modern War Institute. I may be on Wiki, and you're going through, like, Foreign Affairs Journal and things like that.
And I read the whole article, too. And it's funny, too, because I bet that you probably have stacks and stacks of, like, world history books that you've read, and I haven't. So, you know, there we are. We're even.
But I will say this: Foreign Affairs, that quarterly journal, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. If I used to subscribe to it, I still probably should, but it is great. You killed me though, man. I had to put the mic on mute when you said. So I was reading in the Modern War Institute from West Point, and they cited. I'm like, come on, Wheeler.
They really did though, and they made that was an interesting point that they made, basically saying that, hey, U.S. government, maybe you don't, you know, maybe you don't think of this as a problem or as a hurdle, but maybe you think of this as something we ought to be doing just on a regular basis.
But here's the point. Not that, hey, I was reading the other day and they were saying this. It was, I was reading the Modern War Institute. That was just, it was good stuff, man. You never cease to amaze me.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I think you're right. You know, at the beginning of the podcast, you were talking about how there likely will be a movie made after Brian Stern.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a character. And I kept thinking the whole way through, because you and I have interviewed people kind of like this before, and they're normally really secretive, mm-hmm. and they don't want to talk. They don't want to brag about it. He's different because he operates off of a nonprofit, and he has to let people know what he does,
right,
in order to, get people to donate to him. But I would think, considering the different places he operates and the places he's been deployed around the world and likely visited around the world, he has to be pretty loose. You know, he's talking about the Adidas tracksuit, and I'm sure when he's in, Afghanistan and places like that, he's dressed a little more localish there. So
yeah.
When you hear him, you know, kind of laughing about some of this stuff, he's seen a lot, and my guess is he has to be loose in order to deal with it.
Yeah, he's living in a whole different world than most of us would ever conceptualize. I mean, you heard some of the details in there, and it's clear that this guy's dealing with characters that, thankfully, most of us never come across in life. I was thinking as he was talking, not how it was funny how much he was telling us, I thought it was interesting how much he probably still wasn't telling us, you know? Yeah. Imagine the stuff that he's probably holding back, because he can't give away everything, and he probably isn't even giving us the worst of the details, too, that he's seen out there, because he knows it's a general podcast here. So, you know, just imagine what's really going on out there in the world, and, you know, take a lesson from what he said. Like, appreciate what you've got here. We've got it pretty good, you know?
Yeah, 100%. The guy's name is Brian Stern. You can find out more about him on his website. It's projectdynamo.org. Of course, we always appreciate you listening to Yolitics. And as Jason reminds us all the time, please subscribe. If you know anybody who likes, you know, current affairs podcasts on Texas or Texas politics, please tell them about Yolitics as well. We always appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, if you know anybody listening or reading Modern War from West Point, by the way, tell them this is definitely the episode for them.
Well, if anybody calls in and can cite some Modern War Institute stuff, I'll give you $10. I'll give you $10.
All right, we're going to stop wasting your time with our back and forth. We'll see y'all again next week.
Before y'all leave, click subscribe to get Yolitics every week. And if y'all want to talk instead of listen, you can reach the Jasons anytime on the Yolitics hotline at 214-977-6020. That's 214-977-6020. Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.